Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Live Line. Cullamore Mungine here, 087 484 8888 for your WhatsApp. 51551 for your text. Joe at rte.ie for your emails. John Morgan, good afternoon to you.
Good morning, Colm. Sorry, good afternoon, Colm.
The wiping of the wee county, the leaving out of Louth. Tell us about your concerns and where you saw this.
Well, I was watching the advert on television for Falch Ireland have an advert on, and it's promoting the ancient East. And on the television, you see kind of a drawing of Ireland, and then the pencil marks out what they call ancient East. And then it shows a photograph of Waterford, Kildare, Mead, Kilkenny and Cork City. And I'm saying Cork City. I said, well, unless global warming came and it lifted Cork City and pushed it round to County, to the East Coast, because here in County Louth, like, we've the oldest ancient history or story with the great Bull of Cooley, the Tom Bow Cooley. And yet we're not even mentioned. You know, and like last year we celebrated Bridget 1500, which is the 1500th anniversary of St. Bridget. And like we didn't get any mention at all from Bord Fáilte Ireland.
Right. And the problem, specific problem you have is with a TV advertisement that it runs, yeah, well, the length of the eastern side of the country, right down to Cork, as you say, but Louth conspicuously missing from, it has to be said, this is just the TV output from Fáilte Ireland.
Yeah, like I said, the funny, on the TV, the only kind of good advert I did see that promoted Louth was before Easter, Cadbury's were advertising the secret Easter egg, and one of the adverts they had was for Louth, and I think it was Carlingford. They showed a picture, and I said, well, fair play to Cadbury's. It's a pity Bord Fáilte don't do something similar.
Right, and we'll take Glenn McGowan, you're on the line as well. You're working in Louth. It's part. You're part, I suppose, of the Louth offering. Sell us Louth, and
yeah,
tell us.
Can you? How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Glenn. Sell us Louth.
Okay. Well, look. I mean, I'm actually a dub, but we've been up here 20 years with a family business. We have a boutique hotel, Scholars Townhouse Hotel, in the centre of Drogheda, and we love Louth, and there's plenty of tourists. We've opened up a pub recently, Peggy Moore's Pub, with a 50-bed hostel above it for that reason. Louth has so much to offer. You've got, we're certainly a big part of Ireland's ancient East, and we should have got a mention. You have got Mill Mount Tower. You've got one of the oldest barbican walls in Europe in a medieval situation down at the bottom of the hill here. You have got Carlingford, Clarehead, one of the best golf courses in the country, in Sea Point and Baltray, which was in the Irish Open. You have Slane Distillery really close, Bowen Distillery. You've got Newgrange, which was older than the pyramids. So there's tourists coming here all the time, and it's really disheartening to see that Fáilte Ireland haven't got it there, and I presume it's a mistake, but there's so much to offer here with good restaurants, good bars, and we had the Fla Chiol here in Drogheda, and Peggy Moore's and Scholars really reap the benefits of that. It's a fantastic place with beaches, golden sandy beaches. It's really a lovely place to see some seafood towns in Clarehead, and then move up to Carlingford. You have it all, really. County Louth is fantastic.
John, what about Dundalk? Sell us Dundalk, because I don't think Glenn name checked Dundalk there, so sell us Dundalk.
Well, as I say, like, we've the Berta Cuchulainn, and we've Cuchulainn's Castle, and if you drive out towards Knockbridge, you have what we call Cuchulainn's Stone. That's reputedly where Cuchulainn was killed, against that stone. As the other chaps mentioned, we've Carlingford, and we've the beautiful Cooley Mountains, and like where I live, actually, where my parents live, like, we've beautiful views over Sleat Gullion, which would be just across the border, and like, there's beautiful, and as I say, Carlingford, there's great. The north of the county is brilliant as well, and like, and again, we're talking about ancient East, like in Annagassan, which is just south of Dundalk, like they found a Viking boat.
Right.
So obviously, like, that's going back to the 12th century. No disrespect, I don't think Cork can go back to the 12th century. Like, I would regard myself, Colm, as a very proud Dundalk man, Louth mad, and Right. Irishman,
I think,
you know,
in fairness, Cork celebrated its 800th anniversary back in 1985. I think it was Cork's Alive in 85 was the slogan for that one. But anyway, do you feel Cork shouldn't be in Ireland's Ancient East?
No. I'm not suggesting that. But like I say, it actually gets two bites of the cherry, because if you actually look at the advert for the Wild Atlantic Way, it also mentions Cork as well.
Well, it actually gets three bites of the cherry, because in the Ballyhara region of Cork, that fits into Ireland's hidden heartlands as well. So there's the Venn diagram in Cork has a slice in each one of the three circles there.
Yeah, and like even I say, like the birthplace of St. Bridget was Fochart, which is just north of Dundalk. And like I say, we celebrated the 1500th anniversary. And in fairness to the county council, and there's a chap called Martin McGilligot, he's the town manager, which should be separate from the county council. Like, they put an awful lot of effort into it, and they've done great, great work, you know. So like I said, there's an awful lot to offer in Dundalk, and once a month there's a man does a walking tour of the town itself, and he gives great history, and he talks about the murals, because again, that chap Martin McGilligot, now I just know him to see and say hello to, like I don't really know the chap, but he started thinking this thing called an art festival, where famous artists come and they do the murals on the sides of walls, and it's fabulous, you know. All so right. I'd invite anyone to come to Dundalk and
For anybody who's not familiar with the TV ad, I suppose we better give them a listen to it and tickle their memory in case they've come across this ad that runs the sweep of Monaghan in the north to Cork in the south. Here it is.
You might think you know Ireland's ancient east, but maybe it's time for a closer look. An extraordinary glimpse of the oldest of stories. A taste of excitement. To walk in step with history. Raise our spirits with old friends.
Now, there's, I think, snippets shown from counties Monaghan, Meath, Kildare, Wicklow, Waterford, Carlow, Laois, Tipperary, Wexford in that TV ad. Now, we did put into Fáilte, Ireland for
Sorry, Colin. No, you're a wee bit mistaken there. You know what I'm saying? No, it doesn't cover Monaghan. Basically, it covers Waterford, Kildare, Meath.
Wexford gets a good shout at the end. The Heritage Park gets the last word on it.
And Kilkenny, and then it gives Cork City as well. But as I say, it doesn't mention County Louth. And like, we're the smallest county in the country, but we've the biggest heart and the biggest story in Ireland, which is the Tombo Cúige, which I'm very proud of.
All right. And you've put in, have you contacted Fáilte, Ireland, as well as contacting us? Have you contacted them to ask maybe why Louth was left out? I mean, both yourself and Glenn have listed the attractions there. Are you puzzled? Do you think it's an oversight?
Must be just a mistake, an oversight.
Right, well, they do. I'll tell you what Fáilte, Ireland says. As I say, they point out that they're running only one TV ad, and it covers what it covers. But they say they've invested 466,000 in the reimagined Boyne Valley Drive. They've put 400,000 into the Boyne Valley Infrastructure Capital Project. They've put 1.1 million, a little over that, into the Urban Animation Capital Investment Scheme in Drogheda. They've put $500,000 into the Drogheda Destination Towns. Fáilte, Ireland's capital grant allocation of 400 grand in funding from the Office of Public Works for the development of King John's Castle in Carlingford, which they describe as a key project. And they awarded a grant of 118,000 to Louth County Council to develop an outdoor dining facility in Carlingford as part of a scheme called Weatherproofing and Outdoor Dining Infrastructure Grant Scheme. So, I mean, that's, in total, if you tot up that's 3.1 million. Is that more valuable than a television ad, Glenn?
Well, it's, if I can just say, like, it's great, you know, spending the money, but unless they promote it, you know, it's no good. Yeah. Sorry.
Not at all. I'll come back to you, John. Glenn, what do you think?
Yeah, look, I think Fáilte, Ireland are doing what they can. I think that maybe this is an oversight, but we do feel like a lot of the time Drogheda and Dundalk get kind of a little bit left behind, and Carlingford constantly seems to get pushed. There is so much to offer. I'm sure they didn't make a conscious decision to do it, but I think Cork is so popular, I don't think it needs a massive investment. The Wild Atlantic Way is absolutely booming, so it's a pity Louth didn't get a mention, because it is a fantastic county, and that gentleman's right, there's so much to offer. So, but I don't think Falls to Ireland are always forgetting about us. I work closely with a lot of them, and you know, I presume it was a mistake or an oversight. You know,
you think Cork could stand on its own 2 feet. It could have been left out of the TV ad. It has plenty going for it already, and a bit more of a bump. For life. What about?
And it's a great county. It's a lovely county, and I love the Wild Atlantic Way. But those guys are cleaning up when it comes to tourism. You know, the East Coast definitely needs more investment. And by the way, it sounds great, 3 million, but you know, in this day and age, if a bike shed costs 365,000, you know, I mean, money goes very quick these days. So it's not actually a huge investment for a county like Louth that has so much going on. You know, so it needs more, and we need to make it more reasonable for tourists and people coming into the country. And if we really want to see more tourists here, we need more investment, you know, and more advertisements.
All right, Paul, how would you get more tourists in?
Sorry, me, is it? John?
Paul, you have concerns that Louth maybe isn't doing itself too many favours.
Well, look at it, I thought it was a bit short-sighted myself. There seems to be a lot of protest about a new greenway up there in the Cooley Peninsula, which to me, look at, and I know you're never going to please everyone, but I reckon it'd be a great idea. Like, and then you hear people on the other foot that Louth is forgotten and this, that, and the other. Yeah, it may be the two sides of the story aren't being told. That's just what I'm thinking.
Right, and what part of the world are you in?
Well, I'm not too far from Louth, and it is a beautiful county. I'd be up in it often, and very often, and it is beautiful. And Greenway, I would have said, geez, this will do the world a good, like, you know, and maybe a few people get to set up businesses and whatever. But yeah, look at, I don't know.
And you think promoting the likes of a greenway would go far further than a couple of seconds on a TV ad, do you?
Well, I'd imagine so, yeah.
Sure. John, what do you think of that?
Yeah, it's a great idea. In actual fact, I'm at a conference here in Cavan, and we're just after having a discussion about greenways. The senior engineer here from Cavan, they've developed one on the old river line, and like that, we're just talking about, you know, making sure that it's totally accessible. Not just, like, it's accessible for everyone. We don't like to say that it's, you know, wheelchair accessible. We like to say it's accessible for everybody.
And what would you have left out? I mean, there's a budget for an ad. Television time is not cheap. So Falls to Ireland bought this ad. You know, Kilkenny is in it. Yeah. Cork is in it. Wexford's Heritage Park is in it. I think it gets a good lengthy spell of time. What would you have cut down on or left out to put Louth
in?
Well,
no disrespect. With no disrespect, like, obviously, I've been in Cork a few times, and it's lovely. It's a small city. It's great to get around. But, like, as you say, like, the three bites of the cherry, like, they're mentioned in the Wild Atlantic Way. They're mentioned in the Hidden Heartlands, and they're also mentioned in the Ancient East. And I think, am I right in saying Kilkenny is also mentioned in the Hidden Heartlands?
I'm not sure if it's mentioned in the Hidden Heartlands. I'm
not 100% sure myself.
I saw it in the Ancient East anyway there. It features Kilkenny Castle.
So like I say, I think, so and I know this effect, but if they took out the wee segment for Cork and give that 2 or 3 seconds, whatever is Louth.
And you're trying to rob St. Bridget off Kildare, are you?
No, well, listen, it's like this. Like, if St. Bridget wasn't born in County Louth, she wouldn't have been able to go to Kildare to build a church.
Right, so you reckon that there should be more promotion? That you say the groundwork is done already, is it that is it 1,500 years? 1,500 years anniversary
fact,
already got a promotion.
Yeah, in actual fact, I read an article in our local paper where a group of people came up from Kildare, an archaeological group, that was it. Sorry, came up from Kildare, and then after their visit, they actually wrote into the editor of the local press, and they said that they'd never experienced such a detailed tour, and they loved it, and highlighted, and they said they were going to highlight it themselves in Kildare.
And you're in Cavan at a conference. What part of Ireland does Cavan fit into? Is that Hidden Heartlands?
Well, I presume it'd be in the it's in the Hidden Midlands. It's unaccessibility. Like, there's groups here. We had a presentation this morning from an engineer from Derry, and I have to be truthful, like, they seem to be a wee bit ahead of us.
Right, accessibility for tourism sites, is it?
Yeah, well, no, in accessibility in general, like this Friday, all over the country, there's what we call Make Way Day. It's trying to highlight difficulties people have getting around, we'd say, with people who are blind, maybe sandwich boards in the way, or people like myself in a wheelchair, maybe trying to negotiate to get around a bin that's on the footpath, or a car that's double parked on the footpath.
All right, you
can pass it.
The clutter on pavements and people, as you say, parking responsibly,
like
people with visual impairments coming across things that really they're not expecting there or shouldn't be there when they're trying to navigate around. Is it under the tourism umbrella that this conference has been held, or are you doing that in your capacity as a campaigner?
No, just as a campaigner. No, as I'm not in the organising committee, I'm just one of the visitors. We have a wee group ourselves over in we call disability.
All right, Paddy. Go on, yeah. Sorry.
No, so that's right. That's where really there's presentations by different groups.
And how would you rank Louth in terms of accessibility and getting around and tourism sites and the like in your experience?
Well, I don't know. I think it was Charlie Hoyer that said it once. Like, some done and a lot more to do. We've a hell of a lot more to do. But like, it's the same everywhere, you know. Like, but it is getting better now. I have to compliment him. I'm going to name him without a doubt. We've a chap there called Mark Johnson. He's the senior engineer and he's meeting with us, and he's doing an awful lot of work for us. Like, I know it's not going to be done overnight, but he's allocating the budget every year for us, and he's picking different parts of the town. And you know, he's a great man. I have to say, it has to be, the passion has to come from the top, the way down. You know.
All right. Yeah, I think it was Bertie Ahern was a lot done. More to do, I think it was the 2007 election campaign.
I put it the other way around.
Coming into Drogheda, only takes 30 minutes on the express.
Although I think with their issues around Connolly Station, there might be people with a bit more trouble travelling on that line at the moment. But that's maybe a story for another day. Paddy Malone, you'd like to see Louth's history highlighted, would you?
I would indeed. I mean, it's been neglected for years. With the birthplace, as somebody else has mentioned there, of Cúchulainn, St. Bridget, with King John's Castle, we were the end of the Pale. We have so much history in this region. The number of battles that have taken place between the Gaelic Irish and Ulster and the rest of the Normans in Leinster, it's just an area full of history. And both Fáilte have neglected it for years.
And what do you say would have, I mean, Fáilte Ireland have got in touch with us, and they say that, you know, I've outlined the various projects there between broadly Louth, but also into Meath, some of the Boyne Valley projects, 3.1 million, and they're pointing out that this is just one television ad they're running that Louth has been left out of.
Yeah, but it's same thing, exactly the same thing happened in 2015 when they launched the original Ireland's Ancient East, because I was running a conference on battlefield tourism the day after that was run, and it started with the slogan, starting in Drogheda and ending in Cork, which meant that the land of Cúchulainn, the land of St. Bridget, was completely cut out of Ireland's ancient east.
Right.
Now, they apologised and corrected it. But here we are again, 8 years later, looking for another apology.
And they say, now, Fáilte Ireland says in its statement that, you know, that it has a five-year sustainable development plan focused specifically on Louth and Meath, and they say Louth is... it's currently being promoted across various channels, including radio, press, digital and media partnerships, and describe Louth as a key part of Ireland's ancient east.
No disrespect, we haven't seen it yet.
Paddy, go on.
I was exactly what I was going to say. I have seen no sign of it in the last 8 years. And I've seen people like Kevin Woods out in Carlingford promoting the leprechaun and the whole story of Slieffoy. And he might as well be, he's a lone voice in that region. Both Fáilte have done nothing to help him or the region. We have a huge industrial history here in Dundalk, which makes us unique in the 26 counties. Again, no effort to promote it.
Okay. Siobhan Killalay, what aspect of Louth would you like to highlight in the absence of it being in a TV ad?
I was just saying to your researcher there, a friend and I went up last week and we walked the Boyne Valley Camino, which I think it's a relatively new walk. I mean, it's a 25-kilometre loop, which starts off in Drogheda and goes up to a lovely forest walk. Halfway point is Mellifont Abbey, which is absolutely stunning. Have a walk around if you wanted. The visitor centre was closed when we were there, but you could just walk around the the ruins themselves. And then it comes back through, back into the town through the canal, down the canal, and then down the river. It's just stunning. And really a beautiful walk.
Did you do the whole 25K in one day with just a break in the middle at Mellifont?
We did. Yeah, we had a couple of stops for food. And then, it took us, with stops and everything, about 6 hours.
Right.
Stunning. And, really beautiful.
And did you get the weather for it? Was last week, did you get some of the dry weather?
Yeah, great day. Not too hot, sunshine, perfect.
And is it a kind of a hilly walk? Are you hitting up and down Drumlins? Or is the canal bit is obviously fairly flat on the return leg, which is probably pretty welcome.
That was the return leg, yeah.
Any climbs in the first part of it?
There's a bit of a climb. The forest walk is a bit hilly, but I mean, nothing too dramatic,
Right.
Not too challenging. Really, really pleasant day.
And what is there to see at Mellifont Abbey?
Well, it's ancient ruins, but it's massive. I mean, I thought when we went in first, there's a big, the gateway, like a tiny, you would imagine a small castle. And I actually thought that was the ruins, but you go through there and there's a huge, huge development there. Fabulous. Really worth going up to see.
And you stop to eat a couple of times along the route. So how well serviced is the Louth or the Boyne Valley Camino in terms of stops for sandwiches, coffee and maybe restaurants at either end of it?
No, in terms of stops, we brought our own food because my friend had done some research. We do quite a bit of walking. And there's a pub in a place called Tully Allen. But we had to have our own. We brought our own food. So we were fine with that. And that was a great day. And then we had a lovely little hotel in Drogheda and went to the Italian restaurant opposite for dinner and then breakfast the next morning. It was really a very, very nice experience.
You must have worked a preferred appetite after 25K when you hit the Italian restaurant. Was it starters, main course and dessert at that stage?
How I walked over to the restaurant, I don't know. But
really, you were hobbling?
Oh, we were hobbling, yeah. You kind of expect that after. It's a while since I've done such a long walk, but that was great. Really enjoyed it.
Did you have anything medicinal in the restaurant, maybe, to help the sore feet?
Oh, no, that'd be telling.
Right, but you'd recommend it anyway. And come here, is there any souvenir badge? Because people who do other parts of the Camino, the little seashell badges and tokens to show you've done the Camino. Did you get that?
Well, what happens is you can get a passport. You get a paper passport. Now, I didn't get it because I do the Spanish Camino and I didn't think to bring it with me. But you can get it. There are certain points, like churches along the way, that you can get a stamp in your passport to say you've done it. But we didn't do it because I hadn't brought my passport with me. My Camino passport, I meant.
And how do you go in, you're doing some of the walk, and then you go in, is it the porch of the church? There's a stamp there for people to just knock in and stamp their own passport, is it?
Exactly, yeah. You can either go in, but it depends on where you are. Sometimes there's somebody there to do it for you, or if you're, like I say, I've done the Spanish Camino, so sometimes it's a little tourist office, you go in and they'll have it, or a visitor centre or something. And even shops along the way will stamp it for you,
And is it all in the same? I know the Spanish one is associated with St. James, but is there any particular saint that this is attached to, or is it a more secular tourist offering?
As far as I know, it links up with the Spanish one. Now, I don't know at what point. I'm not the researcher of the group, but my friend did tell me it links up with the Spanish Camino.
All right.
So there is, So if you're, I just walk for the sake of walking. I'm not really happy about.
And how often would you do a run like 25 kilometres over the course of a weekend? Is this a regular walking group thing do you do?
No, I'm not in a walking group, but a friend and I do the Camino for a week in Spain. Well, we've done France, we finished France, and now we're in Spain, and we do it for a week every year. So we've had a break now with COVID, and then I had knee surgery. But we would normally do, I'm going now on the 4th of October, and I'm going to do 9 days walking. You'd walk around between 20 and 25 kilometres a day.
All right. Okay. Well, you'd heartily recommend the Louth one. Okay. Thanks for that,
Siobhan.
And all the other Louth lovers. We're back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungo on here, 51551 for your text. Joe at rte.ie for your emails. Edmund Healy, good afternoon to you.
Hey, Colm, how are you doing?
You're not looking forward to February 1st next year.
Well, look, it's not going to impact me, myself, but I'm sure there's a lot of people who are, you know, worried about the impact that it'll have on their family pet.
And this is the XL bully ban.
Yeah, the XL bully ban. Look, before we start and get anywhere at all, look, the bottom line of it is if you have a dog and the dog is aggressive or displays any vicious tendencies or anything like that, I'm not one of these people that's going to, you know, say, you know, everything is black and white and all dogs should be saved and everything like that. But, there, you know, there has to be common sense that comes into it. You know, if a child was ever attacked or anybody for that matter, well, you know, that's a serious thing. And no dog is worth, you know, a child been hurt or even worse, killed or anything like that. So, but unfortunately, in the society we're in now, everything has to be polarised and you have to pin your thing to one side. It's either black or white and there's no room for an open discussion. And that's not just on this topic. It seems to be on a lot of topics affecting society at the minute. So, look, I could just talk about my lived experience with a dog that would have been classed as an XL bully.
Yeah, and what do you think is being missed and why do you think that based on the dog you had?
Well, look, I'll give you an example. I had a dog that I rescued. I had him for 14 years. His name was Buddy. As I said, it might sound a bit soft, but I would have counted him as one of my best friends. He was super intelligent, you know, really emotional. You know, he would be waiting at the door when I'd come home in the evening. My partner used to say to me, you know, the dog would know 15 minutes before you come home and would be over at the door, ready, getting excited. He never barked, let alone growl or snarled. He never displayed any aggressive behaviour to any person or animal of any kind in 14 years. As I said, he was a kind, loving, happy, friendly dog, was loved by all the family and all my friends alike. People would love when they come into the house because Brody'd approach them straight away and just be looking for love off them. So look, he would have been deemed an XL bully because...
Yeah, describe him because, I mean, a lot of people bully is, you know, is a type of dog, but...
That's what I was going to say. A lot of people say just them XL bullies are a vicious breed or something like that. Look, XL bullies, they're counting that as the genus of dogs that are, you know, Amstaffs, which is an American Staffordshire, which is what I had, different types of pit bulls. Look, an XL bully to me is a dog of excessive size, of excessive muscle mass, you know, that is, you know, a really big danger if it was to be aggressive or if it was to you know, be mistreated. Look, again, just going back to my own dog, my daughter was born, she's 9 now, my first daughter was born 9 years ago. She was raised from, you know, day one alongside Buddy. I remember bringing home a baby girl from the hospital so that he could smell it and know that there was somebody new coming to the family. There was never a solitary issue. Obviously, you have to be, you know, a cautious and intelligent person and take precautions and ensure that you never put anybody in danger. But over time, it's got to do with integrating. It's got to do with you know, taking the time and making the effort to ensure that.
But what's the attraction of the particular breed, Edmund? I mean, you know, people might go and they might be interested in getting a rescue dog, but, you know, you're effectively saving a dog from destruction when you go for a rescue dog. Why not any dog? Why this breed in particular?
Look, when I went to the rescue place at the time, they had several dogs. You know, this dog stood out to me. The people that had been around him for months and months on end assured me he may look like a big dog, but, you know, he's super kind, he's super friendly. Obviously, you don't just say, oh, I'll take him home and bring him home today. You know, you go and meet the dog several times. Obviously, you could even take the dog for a weekend. You know, you have to do your due diligence and make sure that, you're not doing something silly by just saying, oh, yeah, you know, this dog is cool looking or something like that. And that's where a lot of the problem lies as well. You'd have a lot of young guys that want it as a kind of a social status thing or, you know, to boost their ego to walk around with a dog that looks maybe a bit tough or something like that.
Right. Well, I suppose they look tough for a reason. I mean, a lot of dog breeds that are deemed dangerous or that are restricted were bred with the express purpose of fighting in the 18th and 19th century. And, you know, these are descendants of those particular dogs. So, I mean, can you see why there is cautiousness there? I mean, if there's an owner who badly handles a Jack Russell, it's not going to do the same damage, maybe, as one of these dogs.
No, it wouldn't do the same damage. But yet again, look, speaking on Jack Russells, I'd have experience with Jack Russells. They are feisty little dogs. Plenty of people that wouldn't open a gate and go into a garden where there's a Jack Russell because they'd have the ankles nipped off them. You know, as I said, look, this is down to, as I said, it's down to just a bit of cop-on. So I coach my daughter's football team. I help coach out at it. I have to be vetted to go and do that. If you want to own a dog that's potentially dangerous or something like that, you should be vetted the same way as you're vetted for several other things.
And was there any due diligence done on you when you were going for the rescue dog? Or, you know, to what degree did they check your capabilities of looking after this kind of dog? And there's no need to mention the rescue place, but just tell, give us...
But they make sure that you're aware of the Control of Dogs Regulation 1998. Keep the dog on a strong lead, on a short, strong lead. It has to be somebody over 16 that's capable of controlling the dog.
Do they ask about your history?
Caller, they've asked, are you a previous dog owner? What is your garden like? I actually volunteered for the ISPCA for several years. They'd give me a call and say, Ed, there's somebody there locally near to you that's looking to adopt a dog. Can you call out to their house and make sure that, you know, they've a fenced-in garden, that it's a suitable place? I didn't rescue any dogs from the ISPCA, but I'm just saying that's, you know, an experience I can speak on. That's something I volunteered and done before where they've said to me, Ed, these people want to adopt a dog. Can you call to their house? You fill out a form with them. You go through everything with them. You make sure that they know that what the responsibility is of adopting a dog. And also you want to make sure, well, obviously it's a fenced-in garden. You know, the garden is suitable. They have enough space, so on and so forth. So, I'll get back to it. I think that the problem a lot of the time lies with people and not dogs.
All right. And can you appreciate that, you know, I know you said at the outset that, you know, you don't really want to go down the road of polarised debate, but the argument you're articulating sounds a bit like the argument around guns in America. People say guns don't kill people. People with guns kill people. So, you know, the blame has been put on the owner of the gun rather than the availability of the weapon itself.
Listen, if I had a dog and I brought a dog home, I have small children. If I am a normal, sane person and that dog displays any sort of aggressiveness to anybody or anything, well, then, sorry, that dog has to go. You know, it's understandable. Look, dogs are like people to a certain extent. You can have dogs that are a bit mad and dogs that are a bit bad and stuff like that. So if you get what I'm saying, it's down to individual circumstances as well. The old saying of we can't tar everybody with the one brush, you know, it's the same thing that goes for dogs. I can speak, as I said, on a lived experience with a dog for 14 years. You could ask anybody that had ever come in contact with him, you know, was there any sort of, you know, fear or aggressive? No, he was a big Egypt that had just, you know, come over and be like, please pet me, and that was it.
Right.
So I can speak for that. What I'm saying, I'm not advocating that dangerous dogs are dogs that are, you know, being kept for, let's be honest about it. A lot of these dogs have been kept for nefarious reasons. You have people that are taking these dogs, they're not integrating them to their family, they're not socialising them, they're not out walking them. These dogs have been kept in gardens, and as I said, sometimes for nefarious reasons, and sometimes it's down to young men that have an ego that think, oh, I'm cool, look at me, I have a tough looking dog. I can only speak from my own experience.
Would you accept your own lived experience is pretty exceptional? As you say, you volunteer your time as a football coach, you know, you're looking after your daughter, her friends, your guard, the vetted, so you're deemed safe. You obviously are interested in giving back to a community and volunteering. You're tied into the ISPCA. You did your due diligence on the dog. You took due precautions. I mean, it wouldn't be everybody who does that with a dog. So, you know, maybe you're giving possibly too much benefit of the doubt to other potential owners. You take a lot of your own positives for granted.
No, I will agree with you 100%. That's why I'm stating, look, we brought in the legislation we're bringing in. Look it up. It's been copy and pasted word for word from the English legislation. There's been absolutely nothing changed in it. They didn't even go as far as to change some of the basic wording in it to make it look a little bit different. So this has just been, let's give ourselves a pat on our back now. Listen, I've lived in Ireland for my whole life. 10 years ago, there was as many pit bulls, Amstaffs, these breeds of dogs in Ireland, but there weren't been documented every single attack on mainstream media every day of the week. It's only recently now, as soon as something happens, it's put up. Again, if I am somebody who is not capable of looking after a pit bull, an Amstaff, or any of these breeds of dogs, and we're going to try and eradicate these dogs from society, I go and buy a Rottweiler. I go and buy an Alsatian. I go and buy a Japanese Akita. I go and buy a Doberman. It's not going to solve the problem. The problem, as I said, is putting in proper legislation and putting in proper things where there's actually some thought and effort and research put into it, not just let's just copy and paste something.
All right, but I mean, without getting into the details of any individual case, if there is a common theme in dog attacks and a similar breed is involved, like there was, for example, you know, historically, maybe Rottweilers were involved in attack, or, you know, there's a reason restricted breeds became restricted breeds, why these restrictions were brought in, why certain types of dogs have to have a muzzle on them, why they have to have a short lead. There was a pattern observed, there was a public safety concern, and I suppose legislators moved to address that concern on behalf of constituents and people who wanted to be protected.
I totally agree. I'm not trying to dispute that at all. I'm not trying to say, oh, all these dogs should be running free and everybody should own one and everything like that. I'm just saying, for somebody who I count myself as a very responsible person, somebody that has a bit of cop on and that deeply thinks into things, doesn't just do something on a whim or get a dog on a whim or something like that, who's going to make the effort to integrate a dog into society to make sure that it's capable of being around people, other dogs, etc., take all the precautions, why should I be treated the same way, and why should I not have the opportunity then to have a dog that is part of the family, is loved, because other people maybe don't do the work. As I said, if we bothered and put in the work behind the scenes and put in legislation and says, okay, listen, you have to be a certain age to drink, you have to be a certain age to smoke, you have to be a certain, you should be maybe a certain age to own a type of a dog that's, as I said, a restricted dog. I have no problem.
Well, we're back
to the
issue of enforcement there, aren't we, though? You know, if people have to be a certain age to buy cigarettes, for example, you know, news agents and the like have to be policed. Yeah. Pubs have to be policed.
In other words, it takes effort and it takes a bit of work rather than just look for the pat on the back and say, we brought in this legislation and we've saved everybody from these dangerous dogs and that can be great. Listen, the bottom line of it is the height of the dog is what comes into it, okay? So you could have a very, very vicious dog that's 50 centimetres tall at the withers, which is the height of the back. So that's, for male dogs, it's about 20 inches, okay? You could have a dog there that's 20 inches. He's not deemed as an XL bully.
Yeah, we're just, just hold it a second there, Edmund, till we fill the listeners in. The reason you're saying 50 centimetres is because the XL bully definition, an adult male, it qualifies as an XL bully if they're 51 centimetres, that's 20 inches at the withers, and an adult female, 48 centimetres or 19 inches at the withers. So the reason you're saying 50 is because that would fall below the definition of an XL bully at the moment.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. You could have a lovely, beautiful, placid dog that's maybe 52 centimetres tall, and you could have another one that's 49 centimetres tall. And we're talking centimetres. And that's our definition of whether the dog should be deemed an XL bully or not. It just doesn't make sense to me.
What about this for an idea? Somebody as a first-time dog owner couldn't own one of these. Maybe there's a sort of a list of more manageable breeds would be recommended for people who are first time owners, and that the likes of the larger dogs would maybe be only available on your second time round.
Listen, there's a swathe of different things that could be brought in, and as I said, look, if somebody's getting a dog and the dog is, we'll say, 26 or 27 inches tall and he's, super big and super powerful. We've seen pictures of some of these dogs. You know, they nearly don't look like dogs. That sort of way. They're absolute monstrosities. Yes, I don't have any experience with a dog of that size, so nor would I probably want one. I'd feel that would be too much of a responsibility. But I'm just going back to, as we were saying, what the definition is for the adult males to be 20 inches. Why 20 inches? Or why 51 centimetres? Right. So as I said, you could have a dog that's 53 centimetres. It doesn't make sense. There could be other things put in place. As I said, I'm not pinning myself to one side or the other. As I said, everything has to be polarised now. I just want people to actually have conversations and discuss things and look into things and educate themselves first without just coming in and looking to give this big whack. I'm pretty sure if I was somebody who had a family member or a child or something attacked by a dog that was owned by somebody who was probably not responsible enough, I would be probably on the other side of this call saying, no, this is wrong. This dog destroyed my child or something like that. I can totally 100% look at things
Speaking for your personal experience. We've somebody else on the line there before I go to the med. When did you lose Buddy? How long has belonged? When did Buddy pass?
Just earlier this year, like as I said, I had him for 14 years. He became a member of the family. I used to jokingly say that he was my first child. As I said, look, I'm...
Are you looking for another dog at the moment?
I've just rescued another dog of the same breed, but he's well underneath the 51 centimetres, so he'd be deemed as a restricted breed as Buddy was, but he wouldn't be deemed as XL.
What's his name?
Yogi.
All right, mind the picnic basket. Emma, good afternoon to you.
Hi. So I suppose I fully support the ban, actually. I live in South Dublin, and I'm horrified locally to often find restricted breed dogs tied to the railing outside my local supermarket. So
don't go too close to identifying the shop or even the specific area. No, that's fine. Yeah, no, go fire away.
So, you know, on a number of occasions, I've walked out of my local shop to be confronted by a restricted breed dog tied to the railing where there's probably like less than a foot between me and the dog. And, you know, so these people, you know, they aren't fully responsible. Obviously, there are some, but there are people who actually think that that's acceptable to own a restricted breed dog and to then leave it unattended. And, you know, I have small children. You're walking out there with small children and... It's so scary and horrifying, really, that that's happening.
And would they be muzzled?
No, absolutely. I've never seen a restricted breed dog in my local area muzzled, actually, ever. And that's just something which I don't understand. And it's so difficult because as a parent with small children, what are you supposed to do? Go up to that person and confront them and say, why do you not muzzle your dog? It's, you know, that's like somebody, to me, somebody with one of those dogs, it's, you know, it's the same as if they were carrying a gun. You just don't do it, you know.
And what kind of leeway, when you say they're tied to the railing, how much kind of leeway do they have on the leash in terms of moving about?
I suppose they have a meter. I suppose, yeah, like they're not long, you know, they've probably got about a meter, but they're literally tied to a railing. But, you know, a restricted breed dog, you know, pursuant to the legislation, is supposed to be, you know, controlled at all times. So leaving your dog outside the supermarket tied to the railing is certainly not controlled.
And are they lying down waiting for their owner to come out, or sitting there morosely hoping for the tail end of a sausage roll when the kids leave the deli counter, or are they, you know, are they actually behaving aggressively and minding their patch as you pass them at the door?
Usually they're standing staring at you. I've had one situation where I was actually, like, the dog was just growling. And you're just like, what will I do? Will I take the chance and go past, or will I go back and go out of the shop and not go in? Or, yeah, so I've encountered both. I've encountered the growling dog, and, you know, I've raised it with management, and, you know, what they say is, oh, what can we do? You know, the customer, you know, they don't want people to stop shopping in their shop, which doesn't really make sense when you think of the danger and the potential risk to their customers.
Yeah, did it stop you shopping in the shop on any occasion?
Well, it certainly puts me off. It certainly puts me off, and I've raised it on a number of occasions, but absolutely, you know, you're always checking and to see if that dog is there. But I don't know, because, like, you know, and you can raise these issues with the council and everything, but I don't feel like there aren't enough dog wardens, I don't think, and I don't think and the guards don't seem to have any power to enforce anything either. So, you know, you just don't really know what can you do when you encounter that. Not very much.
And have you ever contacted the council about it?
I have. Anytime I see a restricted breed dog, you know, in a situation like that, or, you know, also in our local park, sometimes you'll see people who, like, let their restricted breed dog free. And, you know, each time I will always email the council about it. And they are responsive. They do always respond. And they always say, you know, we'll do more patrols in your area. But I've never seen an improvement from it. So I don't really know if that happens, if it's just a resourcing issue.
And when you say being let run free in the park, again, you know, are they muzzled when they're running around free in the park? No.
No. It's like, you know, you will have owners who literally will enter the park and take the dog off the lead and let the dog free.
And not exercise.
And that's pretty scary.
And can they exercise verbal control of them? Are the dogs called to heel, or are they just roaming around, running up to strangers, sniffing them? And
well, they will run up to a stranger, and they are free. And, you know, as in, you know, on occasion I have said, you know, sorry, you know, I'm nervous of dogs or something like that. They're like, oh no, they're, you know, they're, those dogs are reared with children, you know, they won't do anything, you know, those kind of comments. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't, that doesn't give me much comfort as somebody who feels a little nervous and also with small children. I don't, you know, they don't know my children, so I don't feel that comfortable with it.
All right, we're going to take a short break. Back in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Deirdre, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Colm. How are you? You're doing a good job as always, Colm. Fair play to you.
Thanks very much, Deirdre. You were tuned in earlier when we were talking to Edmund about the XL bully ban. You've had your own experiences with restricted breeds.
I had my own experience years ago with a Labrador dog. And I was going out the road for a walk, Colm. Like, Colm, you can't trust any dog. I was going out the road for a walk, and the dog went out Doncaster Road. I'm living in Kells County Mead. And the dog went for me, and he jumped up on top of me, and I said, oh, God. And then I thought he'd maybe go down. Then I tried to push him away, and he grabbed me arm. He put me into a lock. He had me, his teeth in the thing. So the only way I was able to get him off, I was able to grab his tail on my right hand, the only hand I had, because I grabbed him. Oh, he gave me an awful doing, like, and I ended up in Our Lady's Hospital in Navan, a brilliant hospital years ago. Frank Cunningham, the consultant up there, operated on me. I got an awful doing.
And come here to me, you were walking on your own out the road, and my apologies, it wasn't even a restricted breed, it was a Labrador.
It was a Labrador dog. And at the time, I was walking, and he went, like, he got up, and he went for my arm and grabbed me, and I couldn't get him off. He had his teeth sunk into me.
And did he come from behind you or in front of you? Or the side?
No, I was going out, and he was coming up. I was walking out, and he was coming in towards me, and he came over. He just ran over and jumped on me. And I got my heart jumped, and I said, get off, and I put my hand, and then he grabbed me.
And what time of the year was it, Deirdre? I mean, was it warm enough to be or cold enough to be wearing a coat that gave your arm some protection?
It was a good few years ago now. I can't even think. It was a good few years ago anyway, and Navan Hospital anyway. They were doing operations up there. It's a great hospital. I know they're trying to, it's a local hospital, and it's a brilliant hospital only for that. Navan Hospital, I don't know what we do, and it's a great hospital, and they need to keep it opened.
Right.
It's brilliant. Now, I'm after getting two new hips there done there about a year or two ago in Our Lady's in Navan.
Right, so it hasn't stopped you walking anyway. The walking is still going. But anyway, you support a ban on restricted breeds based on your experience, do you?
I do, but I mean, Colm, if people had put their dogs under control, and you know what I mean? But I mean, you can't have a dog near a child or anything like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what? Like, it could happen with any dog. But when I see a dog, Colm, I just start to freeze. When I see a dog, you know.
And were you nervous of them before this?
I always was afraid. I always had a fear of dog. I tell you what, I was always afraid of an Alsatian dog and the Dobermans.
Right.
Even though we had them here ourselves in the house, do you know. But I was always nervous of them. But I know, you know what I mean? I was always a bit nervous of dogs when I'd see a dog coming from me. Now, I don't mind little poodles and things like that. I'd go over and rub them.
All right. Conan, you're calling us. You're against the ban. You are the owner of an XL bully, are you?
I am, yeah.
And what are your concerns come February 1st next year? I mean, presumably you'll make the application to retain the dog anyway.
Yes, I will, yeah. But I'm just totally against the breeding out of any dog. Like, I just think it's wrong. Like, the dog I have at home he's a couple of months old. Like, he is strong in that, but I have him around a 4-year-old child, my own child. And I'd be quite happy to have him around the children and that. But I think it's just down to the way you rear the dog and bring the dog up.
And can you appreciate why other people, you know, there are people who've called us this afternoon who say, you know, they see restricted breeds off the leash and, you know, they want ownership of this particular breed. And what is the attraction of this particular breed over and above any other breed?
Well, I think it's down to a lot of the people that they're using it just for a look more than having the breed of the dog itself. And that's where I would say that there should be like a Garda vetting or even a handler's course for these dogs. And then maybe a 6-month checkup, maybe 2 or 3 times throughout a year or something like that.
And could you really
make sure the dog is...
Could you really see that happening, the resources being devoted to that, when the Gardaí already have so much of their plate and we have such a shortage of dog wardens?
No, I can't see it, but like it would be a nice way of, if it could be done, instead of just restricting the breed itself or any of the other dog breeds.
Right. And in the absence of that, though, can you see why this ban has been introduced?
I can, yeah. Right. Oh, God, I can, yeah.
Vincent, you and your dog were attacked by a dog over the weekend. Do you know what type of a dog it was?
It wasn't an XL bully. It was a much smaller dog, but he still had that bully type look to him.
Right,
and he
fortunately had a muzzle, did he?
I think he had, because neither of the two of us were injured, except I got cut in my knuckles. Hello.
Yeah, no, we're still here. So the dog. How did the attack happen? He came at you with a muzzle. Or was he just using the sheer force of his body to? Bash up against you?
He was trying to bite my dog, and he was doing this thing that, you know, that these bully dogs do. They grab and then they pull. They grab and they pull. And he was trying to do that, but he couldn't get his teeth onto my dog, fortunately, or onto me.
Because of the muzzle.
Yeah.
How did your own knuckles get cut?
I put my hand down to try pushing back, and I think it must have hit his teeth or something. I'm not sure.
Right.
But my knuckles were not badly cut.
All right. And, in a word, you'd support the ban, would you?
Absolutely. And right. Not long that. But I think smaller dogs than that ex-bully are still very dangerous.
Okay, we're going to give you the last word there, Vincent, I'm afraid, because we're out of time. On sound today, it was Tommy O'Sullivan. Okay. Research was by Richie Byrne. Broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin, and the producer was Rachel Gray. And I'm Colm O'Mungay, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungay here. Wayne Christie, if the epic Northside clash of Finglas United versus Malahide wasn't dramatic enough on Sunday, what happened?
We were playing a game. And oblivious to what was going on behind us, a lad I actually know went into cardiac arrest behind us. He was out jogging, and we all got a fright, didn't know what to do, you know.
And did you see him straight away? He was out jogging and dropped
Not
to the ground.
Really. No, only there was a fair play, like. It all rolls into 3 or 4 different people. The first guy was walking his dog, and he shouted over to us for help. But we wouldn't have known now only for that chap. We would have never thought to look behind us to see what was going on. But we ran over, and the first thought that that you learn in the basic first aid course was, you know, recovery positions, because he was on his face, you know.
Right. So describe that to us, Wayne, because, you know,
for
people who don't know, you ran over, the dog walker is there, he's alerted you.
Yeah, the dog walker's just starting to ring the ambulance, and this chap is on his face, face down on the ground, and he's struggling for his breath. And so, you know, the animal in you, or whatever you want to call it, kicks in, and what do you do? I'm no medic, but, you know, you try to use your head as much as you can. We rolled him over onto the side, and he wasn't frothing at the mouth, so I kind of knew it wasn't a seizure. But again, I'm not a medic, so I'm just, this is all going on in my head. What do we do?
In the background, while you're rolling this guy into the recovery position, you're aware of the dog walker on the phone calling the ambulance. Are you aware of how he's getting on, getting through to the emergency services at this stage?
No, we were just, and then another one or two lads come over and said, no, put him on his back. And I think, as far as, because I can't really remember what was all mad, the person on the end of the phone on the emergency was saying, look, keep his head back and start administrating CPR. But for me, I would be old school, CPR, mouth-to-mouth, that kind of stuff. I said, look, lads, I don't know this. And one of the lads just started pumping him and said, look, you don't go mouth-to-mouth anymore or whatever. It's just keep pumping him.
Right. Using two hands, put the heel of your hand down and regular compressions in the middle of the chest.
Exactly. I wouldn't have had a clue. And that's why I said, look, can someone else do this? Because, you know, and your basic first aid, you're not taught that, you know. You're only told how to put someone's arm in a sling or whatever.
So when you've moved aside and somebody else is administering CPR, ambulance at this stage is on the phone. So does the guy on the phone have the ambulance up on speaker for everyone's benefit at this stage?
Yes.
Okay. And where are you? What are you doing?
I'm holding his hand, talking to him because I know the chap. So I knew I know his name. And I'm just holding his hand, talking to him, trying to keep him from going. I'm just going, really.
And what are you saying to him? Are you asking him questions?
I'm just calling his name, and I wouldn't repeat what I was saying, cursing at him, come on, stay with us, you know. And I was like, squeeze me hand, and I could feel a faint squeeze, you know. So he was listening to us, but he was just gasping. You're holding his hand, are you?
You're holding one of his hands, and I'm putting a bit of pressure on him. You're shouting his name, and
they're walking on him. But one of the other, Cal Carey, the other coach, he's giving the CPR compression and assessing him.
Right, you're breaking up slightly there, but you're giving it Holly anyway, verbally. And did you detect any response? I mean, your volume at this stage, I take it, is you're speaking to him at a fairly high volume, using what we'll call maximum impact vocabulary to try and keep his attention. Is that it?
Yeah, just to try keep him with us, yeah. Because basically that's all I knew him anyway. You know what I mean? Some things you pick up is to keep them alert, try to keep people, you know, with you, I suppose, you know, you see it in whatever, on the telly or wherever, you know.
Yeah.
It's keep them with you, I suppose.
You're trying to stay calm, you know, to be in control of the situation, but at the same time, you're trying to frantically talk to them, so you're not getting any time to sit back and breathe. Can you remember how you were feeling as it was touch and go with this fella?
Yeah, I was like, no way, you know, without saying a lawyer, but the lips and all were going black and stuff, so I ran over and got the... And while they were still walking on him...
You just broke up there for a second, Wayne. Yeah. You ran where and got what?
I ran over to the clubhouse and got the defibrillator and brought it back. And I knew, I hadn't a clue how it worked, but I remembered someone saying that the machine speaks to you and tells you what to do.
Right, and so did you operate the defibrillator?
I didn't, because when I brought it back over, I had it stripped off ready. He was kind of still with us, so he hadn't gone. He wasn't fully gone, you know. And so the fire brigade came to the wrong gate. So while they were still compressing on him, I just ran over. I kind of encouraged the firemen to run across. That wasn't good news, you know.
Right.
So,
encouraging them at this stage, probably in the same strong terms, you were encouraging the unfortunate jogger to stay alive, were you?
Well, put it this way, yeah, I was like, this, come on, like, seriously.
Yeah. And Camille, just going back to the defibrillator, is that something that the club had to fundraise for? You know, were you long getting it, and was it easy to access?
Okay, I'm not sure, but I would imagine you get them yourself. The club get them themselves. It was indoors, so if the place was locked up, you're not getting it.
Right.
You know?
But anyway, the club luckily was open and it was accessible and you were able to get it. So you'd run off at this stage, you'd seen the fire brigade, they were at a given access point to the park, you were pointing them to the scene where this guy needed help. Was the defibrillator being administrated? Was it administered at this point?
Yeah.
Right.
They gave him a blast of it, yeah. And when the fire brigade came over, they had the oxygen stuff and like within 2 or 3 minutes, he was kind of back, coming back around, you know.
And had the defibrillator, kind of G'd him up a bit before the oxygen arrived. It had.
Yeah, I think so.
So between all of those stages, you know, he was kept hanging in there long enough, and then the oxygen was applied. Do you know? You say you know him, and you know we won't mention his name or anything. But did you manage to follow up and find out how he's getting on?
Yeah, look, getting into the ambulance, he was asking me where's his phone, and so I was just don't be worrying right. about your phone, you know. And I know him, and he rang me. And I've been in touch with him since, so he's in great health. He's in great spirits. Mm. I think he's had a stent put in, and it was a blockage. So he's feeling a bit sore now from his chest. He was saying his chest is a bit sore.
Right. And so, did he get his phone?
He did, yeah. He did have his phone, yeah.
Right, I'd say he was able to. People were relieved anyway that by the time he was contacting his nearest and dearest, the worst of the drama was over. And can I ask you, did the match resume?
We did, and to be honest with you, I wasn't the better for it all day. You know, I would have rather. Like, the kids didn't know anything about it. The kids thought he just fell. And it was actually half time, so they went into the dressing room.
Right, and how long would you say the whole thing took before you got them back out on the pitch?
A good 25 minutes.
Who won?
We did. Half English United.
Right. How much? By how much?
3-0.
3-0?
Yeah, 3-0, yeah. So, right. There was a, you know, every cloud, you know, that saying, you know.
Wins all round for Finglas United then.
And you know what? I just while I'm on, I want to wish, he knows himself, a speedy recovery, you know. And to be honest, not just me, Carl Carey and the chap that was walking the dog, and another lad from St. Joseph's that was on the, he was around the pitch as well.
And of course the fire brigade, who ultimately
and the fire brigade and the ambulance that came.
Yeah.
Look, it was a whole team effort, and to be honest with you, it's just luck, you know. It's where it happened, and that's where it happened and when it happened.
Except for Malahide, who lost 3-0.
There you go.
They'll have their day. All right, Wayne, thanks a million. We'll take a break. Back in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungine here, 51551 for your text. joe@rte.ie for your emails. Now, yesterday, Louise was in touch, and there was a vacant space in a Dublin city centre car park. There was a man standing in the space. She didn't know whether he was occupying it or not, but anyway, he directed her into the car parking space. And when she got out and talked to him, he said he was about 75 years of age, that he had left the fob of his car in a shop. He appeared to be in a very distressed state, and he was looking for the money for a taxi to go back to what he said was his nearby office, retrieve a spare fob. And Louise informed him that she couldn't hang around for long. He said that was no problem. She could go about her business, and he would return the 50 euro, a 50 euro note, the only thing she had on her, that he would pop a 50 euro note in an envelope and stick it under her wiper. But she waited for around an hour. There was no sign of him coming back. And Louise was wondering whether the bona fides as presented were entirely in order. Now, we had another couple of callers who had a similar experience with a similar man matching a similar description in other Dublin city centre car parks. Mary Donnelly, this all sounded very familiar when you tuned in yesterday.
Yes, it did indeed. I was on my way. I was driving to the park and listening in, and I heard this woman talking, and I just laughed because I said, that's exactly what happened to me. So I was driving to a city centre car park, a hospital car park with my husband, and it's a very crowded car park. And I had to leave my husband up. He went up to his appointment while I tried to find a parking space. So I'd driven around a few times, and eventually I found one, which was near a pillar. It was hard to park there. And this chap came over to me, a tour guide in a suit, fairly elderly. I thought about 60s. I couldn't exactly say. But he said, come on, you're all right there. You can easily get in there. And he started helping me. And he just reminded me of back in the 70s when those guys would come up to you when you'd be going to park and they'd say, I look after your car for you now.
The fellas in the hats, they used to call them the Lockhard men. They would,
That was fine because you were afraid not to. They said, we look after your car. Anyway, it was just like that. And that's what I thought about him, actually. But I got the car parked anyway, and the window was down because I'd come through the barrier. And he said, no, I have a little problem myself. He said, I'm after locking my keys in the car, and my laptop, my wallet, everything is in there. He said, and I need to get back. I need to get a taxi to get back to my office. It's not far away. And so on. And so I didn't fully believe him, but I just wanted to get out of there. I was in a hurry to get up to my husband, and I was feeling a bit vulnerable, really. And anyway, I got my purse, and luckily I had a 20. I was glad I had the 20 in it.
Right, you were nervous. You were you nervous opening the purse in front of him? Not that he had made any explicit. Threat or demand, but you know, you felt there was an expectation for money to change hands, and you were feeling nervous on your own in the car park.
Yes, exactly, because I had actually read about incidents in that particular car park before. You know, it seems that he approaches women on their own, and I mean, I'm not a young woman either. I was equally as old as himself, but. Anyway, I was just grateful that I had the 20 euro, and I said, will this be okay? Will this do you? And then he rained blessings on me and all the rest of it and that, and he went on his way.
And did he say by any chance that he'd light a candle for you? Because I think that was...
Yes. He was going to light a candle, and he was praying for me, and he was blessing me, and I was the best thing since sliced bread. Anyway... Made me feel good about myself. No, I knew I wasn't going to argue the toss with him because I didn't know. I needed to put up my window as well and lock the car and get away. And that's it, really. That was about 2 years ago. So he's still doing the rounds, it sounds like.
Well, now, either he's doing the rounds or there's more than one person with a similar tale of woe, or... People with city centre offices frequently lock their fobs into cars, and then there's a lot of people somewhere in excess of 60 years of age who make this mistake and then approach people in car parks looking for money.
Yes, exactly. Yes. But he deserves an Oscar if he was as frail and shaking as that woman said yesterday. Well, he wasn't shaking. He looked like life hadn't been good to him, but he was dressed in a suit and a shirt and tie to look the part. But his face was quite gaunt, and he was slim-looking, craggy face.
A newspaper under the arm?
Pardon?
Did you not notice a newspaper? He was carrying a broadsheet Sunday newspaper under the arm. We won't speculate as to the title, but...
To be honest, I didn't notice the paper. Now, I couldn't remember that. But he was wearing a brown suit.
And did you mention it to your husband afterwards, the exchange that took place?
I said it to my husband when I went up, and he said, that was a scam you were. But I didn't mind. It was 20 euro. And I was more interested in getting the car parked because I'm not the best at parking. And the only things available are usually those ones by the pillars. And my husband was just really... really sick at the time and up in oncology. So that's my story.
Right. And your husband, was the treatment successful?
Well, he unfortunately died last year.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He had been going, during COVID, he'd been going for treatments, and I was sitting in that car park. That's why I did feel vulnerable, because I'd read about incidences, and I would have sat for up to 3 hours in the car park waiting for him. During COVID, I'd bring a flask and a sandwich and just wait. And in the winter time as well, I remember one December sitting there, and it was getting dark, and you never knew when he was going to come out. So, I was going through a tough time. So it was a kind of a benign kind of a mugging, really. He didn't demand my phone and my wallet, as I know has happened recently to someone I know.
And you're keeping...
And I was going to tip him, actually. I was kind of thinking in my head now, how much should I give him for this? Because he was being helpful, you know. But in the end, I just said, I had the 20, so I was happy. I'm glad it wasn't a 50.
Sure.
I didn't expect to get it back.
Yeah. You know. Nor in your case did he offer. Well, I'm sorry, very sorry for your loss, Mary. I hope you're keeping better since last year and your loss.
Yeah, well, I'm getting by, yeah. I'm getting by. It was a tough time. But, yeah, that's just one memory that I have, you know, and it was 2 years ago, so amazing that he's still doing it.
All right, Mary, thanks for calling us this afternoon. We'll be back shortly after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.